RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head on over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation, the industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete line of products, visit Thetford.com.
And by Go RVing. Away is a place that's easy to find and a feeling that's impossible to forget. To find your away, visit GoRVing.com.
And by Outdoorsy, the largest and most trusted rental marketplace, Outdoorsy is making it safe and easy to make money renting your RV. With full insurance, roadside assistance, security, payments, and real people ratings and reviews. Visit Outdoorsy.com to find a cool RV to rent or see how much money you can earn renting your own RV.
And by GoPower. For 22 years, GoPower has been a trusted leader in the mobile solar and power inverter market. Their solar and inverter systems and kits offer full-time or secondary power sources wherever grid power is inaccessible, unavailable, or unsustainable. To size a power system for yourself, visit gpelectric.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes, and also Sweet Maggie the camping dog.
You can read about our adventures at rvfta.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are taking you to Wildlife Safety School. Rachel Levin is the author of Look Big and Other Tips for Surviving Animal Encounters of All Kinds. It's an A to Z guide to wildlife safety that will keep you safe in the suburbs, at the beach, or at the campground and out on the trails.
Whether you are afraid of ants or alligators, bison or bear, Rachel has some great tips for you. We also offer a select guide to additional wildlife safety resources that will give you all of the details you need for a safe and happy summer filled with fun and adventure.
You might think that bears are your number one safety concern this summer, and you are right to pack your bear spray, but we know that there are all kinds of critters that can be encountered in the great outdoors. So RVFTA and Rachel Levin are here to get you prepared. You are listening to episode number 191, Wildlife Safety 101.
Before we head into this week's featured topic, Wildlife Safety 101, it is time for another RVFTA summer travel tip, and this one is sponsored by our friends at Outdoorsy.
Outdoorsy is the largest and most trusted RV rental marketplace, and they are making it easy to make a little scratch renting out your RV. And in fact, I had my very first Outdoorsy payout last week after renting Penny the Pop-Up for the very first time. I can truly attest to the fact that the whole process was amazingly seamless, from listing Penny the Pop-Up on the Outdoorsy platform all the way to actually checking her back in and returning the security deposit.
And I love how when you get the money, it says that your money has been released.
It's been released into the bank account, which was very nice. They send you prompts like all through the week, the day before, just reminding you of things that you might, you know, need to take care of. Oh, here's just a reminder. You've got a rental tomorrow. Make sure the RV is clean and gassed up or whatever, you know. And then at the end, they prompted me to review my renter and to release or hold the security deposit. I could choose, like, if I needed to hold any of the security deposit. So it really was honestly amazingly easy. And I had a lot of nerves going into the process, and I kept waiting for something to go wrong, and nothing went wrong.
Yeah. And you did the pickup and drop off for an extra fee, and you did that on your own.
Yep, I did. So you can visit outdoorsy.com/list-your-RV for more info today.
All right. For our RVFTA summer travel tip for this episode, we want to talk about getting gas. And if you're a newbie RV owner, or if you're just a couple years into that journey, or if you just bought a bigger RV, stopping and getting gas can actually be a major stress point for RV owners. And over the years, I think we've gotten pretty good at it, and we've kind of eliminated a lot of the stress, even though occasionally we still find ourselves in a situation where, like, well, we're not sure if we can get in or get out. But we have some basic principles that help us find good places to stop and get gas. And we kind of just know what to look for at this point.
So first of all, we just want to mention, if some of you are newbie RVers, or if you're thinking about getting an RV, there's something that you might not realize going into this. When you first get an RV, you might think, oh, I'm going to go through those big truck lanes at the rest stops, right? At the gas, the bigger rest areas. And because it'll say like cars this way, buses and trucks that way. But the problem is that those truck lanes, for the most part, only have diesel gas. So if you have a diesel truck, or a diesel RV motorhome, that'll be fine. But most of us actually don't. Most of us have gas trucks and most of us have gas motorhomes, just in terms of the statistics, right, of that. So most of us will not be able to use those big truck lanes. We actually got into a couple of situations when we first got the RV, going to those truck lanes, hoping that there was a regular gas pump there, but there wasn't. And then you can't get back to the car lanes and we would have to go on to the next gas station.
I've always wished that those diesel lanes also had a gas lane for RVs, right?
Well,
that are being towed by, you know, F-150.
Right. It would make it easier. And that's our first tip. So there is a case where you can get gas in an RV lane, and those are at the Pilot Flying J's. So you're not going to always be able to stop at a Pilot Flying J, but I will say that that is the easiest thing to do as an RV owner. If you get the My Pilot app, you can look and see if you're near a Pilot Flying J. Some of them, you'll also be able to see like what amenities they have at that Pilot Flying J. Some of them have what they call RV lanes. These do offer regular gas in the RV lanes, and they are the easiest way to get gas if you are towing. So look on that app and see if that's ever an option.
You can also grab a quick shower afterwards if you need to, right?
Or dump your tanks, because they have the dump stations and they have a lot of other. Look, if you're a Good Sam member, you can swipe your Good Sam card and I think get like a 5 cents gas discount. There are a lot of different RV perks to Pilot Flying J's. Like I said, we can't always stop at one, but when it's an option, it's a good one
to
take.
We look for them. Now, if you can't, or if you need gas and there's not some gigantic Pilot Flying Jay there, some basic principles that we follow. We want to be able to see the gas station from the interstate so we can kind of eyeball it and make sure that we're going to be able to get in or get out. So if it says like, oh, gas 1 mile, and it's, you have to exit and then drive a mile and you can't see the gas station, we avoid those like the plague, basically, because you just don't know what you're getting into. So a big rule here is you want to be able to see the gas station that you're going to pull in advance, and you want to look for gas lanes that are parallel to the road, which makes it a little bit easier to get in and out. If they are not parallel to the road, you can get into some trouble.
Right. So if they're perpendicular to the road, i.e. facing that gas store, you know, that can make it a little tricky. If you can get an end, you know, spot on those, you can manage them. But just try to picture that in your mind. We've found that the very easiest thing to do when those lanes are parallel to the road is look for those ways you can kind of scoop in, pull right up to that pump, and then scoop out on the other end, almost like you're pulling through a dump station. You know, some of the gas stations are formed that way, and those are the absolute easiest to do.
Now, if we have to pull in and we cannot then pull out of the gas line, we've become very comfortable at backing the RV out, right? So you pull in to get your gas, and then I'll have Stephanie hop out. She'll kind of stop traffic with her good looks and guide me back out, and we'll reverse out onto the, back out, not onto the road, but back out into the parking lot so that we can get situated to get back out on the road. So don't be afraid to have to back out of a gas lane.
Well, yeah, you just only pull in so that your truck is just there enough that you can fill up gas, and then you just scoot yourself back. And I mean, obviously that's not possible in every gas station, but a lot of them, it is remarkably easy. It seems crazy at first, but you're like, oh wait, this is no big deal to just back up and pull out.
But you want a clear exit strategy, right? I mean, you don't want to pull in to get gas if you're not sure how you're going to get out of that situation. So go slow down as you pull in, eyeball it, discuss it a little bit, make sure you know how you're going to get out.
Wait for the gas lane that you want. Don't be scared to just sit there and, you know, you're big. People will figure out a way to get around you. If somebody's in the, you know, exterior gas lane and that's where it's going to be easy for you, just be patient and sit and wait. Don't try to fit inside into an interior lane if that's not right for you. Now, I know a lot of our listeners, we don't actually do this. I just always use my eyes, because I'm pretty comfortable with what a good gas station is at this point and what a good gas station isn't. But a lot of people use the app for Google Earth, and they actually look at gas stations coming up, and it's a really good idea, and I should do it. I just have been too lazy.
Well, you're a little bit of a Jedi with this, right? I mean, you do the navigating, and then you really do size up a gas station very quickly for me. So when I'm driving, I'll be like, Stephanie, do you see the way out of this one? And you kind of take a look, and you're like, okay, we can get out here, or we're going to have to back up, or that's the lane we want. I mean, that's so important. Get into the best lane, even if you have to wait. You don't want to totally be blocking traffic, but as long as you realize that cars can get around you, even if they might act a little annoyed or impatient, so what? You need to get gas safely.
And My Gas Buddy is another app that you can venues. There are many pictures of the gas stations in My Gas Buddy, so you can look in there. I mean, obviously you're not like worrying so much about the best gas price when you're towing, because you want it to be easy. So you can also use that to just, if you really want to be confident.
All right. Now, once you survive all of the encounters with gas stations and other drivers, and you actually get to the campground or you get to the national park that you're going to, you need to be safe in terms of wildlife encounters. And we have got you covered on this episode. We have a special guest today named Rachel Levin, and she recently published a really fun, beautiful book called Look Big. And it is an A to Z guide to surviving animal encounters and making smart and safe decisions in animal encounters and avoiding them altogether. So we're really excited to talk to her. We're going to come back with a two-part interview. And then at the end of the show, we'll come back and we have some other resources for you so that you can be safe when you are hiking, when you're in a national park, or if you're at the campground. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are really excited to be here with Rachel Levin, the author of Look Big and Other Tips for Surviving Animal Encounters of All Kinds, which is the cutest and most charming wildlife safety book in the universe. And we're going to dive in and get all kinds of great tips from her. But before we do that, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco.
The 2018 Red Hawk offers one of the best values in its category without skimping on superior handling and solid construction. It features J-Ride, a powerful blend of precise handling and renowned stability that comes complete with Jayco's 2-year limited warranty. When the ride is this smooth, the fun is easier to find. Visit your local Jayco dealer or Jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, we're very excited to have you on to maybe have a fun time talking about a not so fun topic, which is surviving wildlife.
It's not fun.
You've made this fun. This is the most adorable wildlife safety book out there. We're gonna dive right into this thing. So this book, or the genesis or a main idea for this book, started with a moose encounter that you had in Breckenridge, Colorado. Can you take us back to that moose encounter and tell us how you got the idea for Look Big?
Sure. I was cross-country skiing by myself in the woods in Colorado, escaping the rest of my family that I was with. And I was just alone in the woods and was just gliding along. And then all of a sudden, I kind of stop and there's this giant creature standing before me, just quietly staring at me. And I didn't register. It matched the trees. It was brown, just like the bark. And I just kind of stared at it, wasn't quite sure what was going on. And then I realized, wait a minute, I think that's a moose. And we just looked at each other. And then because I'm from originally Boston and then now California, I haven't really grown up around moose. And I just hadn't, and even though I'm outdoorsy, I had no idea what to do when you saw a moose. So I guess I did what you're not supposed to do, which is turn your back on it. And I just kind of glided away and said out loud, please don't follow me. but I wasn't really scared. I just was kind of like, please don't follow me. And then I kind of just glided away. And then I got back to the house and told my husband, he's like, it wouldn't have followed you. It would have charged you. And I had no idea, which I realize now is kind of ridiculous. But anyways, I had no idea. And then so that was like one of the main instigators for the book. But then at the same time, I had raccoons in my trash can. I'm a trail runner and have grown increasingly neurotic about the idea of running, of a mountain lion attacking me while I'm running, which I realize is also rare, but yet possible. And stuff like that. So basically it was like kind of, I realized all these animals were all around us and the tips are always out there, but kind of like floating in my head on various like national park signs. And I thought it should all be in one place in a fun way.
And you're a writer.
Remember it forever.
And like most, you're a writer, a journalist, and like most writers, you're neurotic, and you found yourself surrounded by animals. So all of a sudden, there's this idea for this book. Can you take a second and kind of describe this book a little bit? The look of this book, the feel of this book, the content of this book. It's not your typical wildlife safety book, to say the least.
Thank you. I didn't want it to be because I thought that's not. I wanted it to speak to people, you know, like me, who love the outdoors, who aren't like super nerdy, hardcore, you know, into it, but also love it. And I wanted to speak to people who actually might not even like the outdoors, might live in a city or a suburb as well. And I thought everyone needed to know everything. And so basically, it's a cute, as you say, book. It's lighthearted but legitimately helpful. 50 of our most feared and frustrating wild animals, from mountain lions to moose, like bears, bees, ticks, coyotes, raccoons, rats. and it's illustrated by this awesome guy in Sweden we found, Jeff Osberg, who did a great job. We kind of wanted like a retro Boy Scouty kind of look. And I think he did a fantastic job. And each page is illustrated and the covers kind of has a guy in a tree looking down at a moose.
Yeah, it looks a lot more charming than your typical like national park pamphlet. So you definitely won on that.
A key point here, which just to kind of put a fine point on this, this covers your urban animal encounters and your encounters in the great outdoors. So it's useful for you at home or on a national park strip, which is what I loved so much about it. So let's dive in. Let's talk about alligators, because that starts with A. What do we need to know about encountering alligators?
I mean, you'd think we wouldn't really encounter, like that alligator encounters are pretty rare, but we always hear about them. And they actually, if you live in places like Florida, they're actually not so rare, I think. My grandparents live in Florida. I've seen alligators on the golf course, luckily from afar. But yeah, I think, and clearly there was, I think, just some awful alligator story in the news. And we hear these stories in the news and we're like, oh my God. Anyways, alligators, what we should do when we see one is to, well, hopefully if you're in alligator land, like if you're in Florida or you're somewhere where you know alligators live, and experts told me, I did interview a bunch of experts for this book, every maybe at least 50 or 60 experts, but tell me that if you're in alligator land, don't even really go swimming. Like you're not supposed to swim where alligators live ideally, because in every body of fresh water in Florida, there's alligators in it. That's just something that you should know if you're in Florida, but just be careful. So basically, if you see one and you're on land and it's on land, run. They say zigzag, straight line, it doesn't really matter. But you might actually have a shot of beating an alligator in a race. So if you can run, just get the hell out of there. But they rarely would pursue on land. They're mostly around water. And if you're in water, they ambush. So you just got to stay alert. You got to stay really alert. And if you are attacked, you just got to fight. And if you put up a good fight, they might decide to ditch you because they don't really want to contend with like a violently struggling prey. But scream, splash, kick, and you could try punching it in the snout or gouge the eyes. That's kind of like missed, I guess, but also you might as well try it. You know, it has worked before.
All right. So we're going to go from, and we're going to talk mostly about animals that we feel our RVing listeners might have trouble encountering. And alligators are one of them because Florida is one of the most popular RVing states in the country. So let's move on to a much smaller, less obviously aggressive, but just as annoying creature. And that's the ant. So RVers really actually struggle with the ant population quite a bit because we're constantly parking our RVs in their territory. So tell us a bit about how we can deal with them. We're not going to kick and bite and gouge their eyes out. What are we going to do?
That would be hard. Where are their eyes? I think, first of all, I love that RVers have problems with ants too, because I just feel like it's such a house problem too. At least in my house, it's always a problem in winter, especially when it rains. Ants are out of control. That was also another impetus for the book, because ants were always in the cereal boxes and my kids were eating cereal with ants in it. And accidentally. So I think with ants, you want to do what you do as you do in your home. Keep a clean home. Don't leave food out. Like even like potato chip crumbs, like will attract ants. And they just come in through like cracks and like find their way in. So I'm assuming RVs have easy access ways in too. I don't know. So I don't know how they all get in. But once they're in, there are all these home remedies that people try that involve like lemon juice and like little tubs of Tabasco sauce or white vinegar. But no one had ever really studied what sort of those DIY deterrents actually work. But I spoke here with an entomologist at the California Academy of Sciences, which is an amazing museum and research institution here. And they have launched this year a citizen science project urging people everywhere to send them their ant solutions, but you know, what works, what hasn't. So they're testing all the things like lemon, cinnamon, cayenne, pepper, Tabasco sauce. And so far they're still, the experiment is still undergoing. And so if you have stuff to contribute, definitely reach out to the Academy of Sciences Ant Project. But so far cayenne pepper is a loser. Pepper in general is a loser. I think they're saying cloves could be a leader. Cinnamon might be your best bet. They still don't know. So I would go with little piles of cinnamon over little tubs of Tabasco sauce for now until we know for sure.
I would prefer cinnamon sprinkled all over my RV than any of those other things.
Might have a nice like little smell, little cinnamony cocoa smell. And then otherwise, you can go the liquid taro ant bait is like the superstar celebrity of ant bait things, you know, on Amazon, hardware stores, wherever you get your
link to it in the show notes.
Yeah,
if you want to,
at least 5,000 reviews on Amazon, all rave.
So, awesome.
You have that.
Great tip. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about bats, because I think that bats are a lot more complicated than people think. And a lot of RVers, and in terms of hiking in national parks, like when we were at Mount St. Helens last year, we were hiking and bats were definitely an issue. So what do we need to know about bats?
Usually they keep to themselves and we keep to ourselves. We don't usually overlap. We might see them just kind of hanging or zooming around as we're having like drinks outside or something. But bats, you know, are okay. We need them in the world. They devour like 1,000 mosquitoes an hour, so we can have bats to thank for that. But they also carry rabies, which is and bats are the most common ways I think rabies are transmitted to people these days. So and even though about only 1% of bats actually carry it, you got to just be aware and you don't want to take any risks. So it used to be that if you had like tiny teeth marks on your skin or you felt dizzy, then you knew you had been bitten by a bat. But now, recently there've been multiple cases of people unknowingly contracting rabies just from being in the same room as a bat. So experts now agree that if you see a bat in your room, you should just get tested. Like if you wake up and you realize there's been a bat in your room, even if you don't think you've been bitten, you might as well go in for a test for rabies just in case.
So then also it might be better to let an expert deal with a bat removal if they get in to someplace than to try to do it with the tennis rackets and everything.
Yeah, you don't want to really try to be a hero with a bat because of the risk of rabies. So, I mean, if you want to go try to do it yourself, put on leather gloves, they say, because that could help deter the bite. But, you know, you could try to do it yourself, but through like, you know, put a box over it and slide something under it and try to get it out. You could, and then duct tape it, or you could open the window and see if it flies out that way, which is usually the best thing to do. Otherwise, you can always call an expert.
All right. Now, one of the most prevalent wildlife safety questions from our listeners has to do with bears. Of course, many of us live in more populated areas and don't have a lot of bear contact, you know, other than maybe the random one that wanders around your neighborhood every 10 years, you know, that they relocate. Mm-hmm. But then what happens is we take our RVs to places that are very remote, you know, Yellowstone, all these places. And we know that there is a significant possibility of encountering a bear. And, you know, for people that don't live in quote unquote bear country, that's very, you know, kind of frightening and a little overwhelming. So can you kind of break down the most important points of bear safety for our audience?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, is that really the danger comes from humans not knowing how to react when they see bears, I think, or not behaving properly around bears, at least in places like, I'm sure RVs go to Lake Tahoe, near where I live, which bears are just out of control. They're eating our food. They're getting into our food, and they're learning to be less afraid of humans because humans are unintentionally feeding them and sometimes intentionally feeding them. So really, I think we need to stop feeding bears. I mean, you always see the signs, don't feed the bears, but that really is a crucial rule. And so I think you want to, I mean, basically, in terms of if you encounter a bear on a trail, which is probably, or at your campsite, I don't know, they're coming in more and more to campsites. A friend of mine was eating dinner, and the bear literally came, two bears came up behind them and just started eating too. Like, literally, it's that out of control, I think, at least out here. So I think if you, you know, if it's a black bear on your turf and you can tell it to go away, they say, Ann Bryant at the Bear League in Lake Tahoe says just, they're like big chickens. I don't know, but she says just be inhospitable and clamp and stomp and they go away, and it should go away, hopefully. But if you're like hiking along and you see a bear on the trail, you want to, one, say, hey, bear, every so often to alert and let them know that you're there in the first place, because you might not see them, but they might see you. And really, you want to just judge the bear, read its signals. If you startle it and it startled you, that's sort of the scenario in which you want to just ease up and sort of back away slowly, say, hey, bear, I'm human, you know, and don't look it in the eye, just kind of retreat.
And while facing it, though, correct? Not turning.
Yeah. Not turning your back. You never want to turn your back on anything, really. I think just you want to never turn your back. But you want to read its signs. So that whole, it's a black bear, it's a grizzly bear, experts told me that that's not really what you're looking for. What you're looking for is trying to read its signs. In the moment, that's not easy. I mean, who's gonna be thinking that clearly? But I think if you kind of study up, you'll know it. So you want to see if the bear's behaving defensively, which is probably most common. You know, their ears are back, their paws are swatting, and their jaw might be clacking, and they might be huffing a little bit. A black bear cub might, like, climb a tree. But if a bear is acting defensively, you want to retreat gradually, avoiding eye contact, and just appear unthreatening, which you know you are, but they don't know you are. But a bear also could be behaving predatorily, in which case its ears would be forward, its head would be kind of up, staring at you, quietly stalking almost. And that's when you want to look big and lock eyes and shout and be intimidating.
And maybe even, and would you want to gather together at that point? If you're a family hiking, you literally want to look like you're more than one creature. You want to look like a big monster.
Exactly. So gather, if your kids are around, like, just kind of gather everyone together, even put them on your shoulders, raise your backpack over your head, look as big as possible. I mean, I'm 5'2". I'm not going to look that big if I'm by myself, but if I have some people around me, I will look a lot bigger. So you want to, just kind of gather together, but never run. I mean, the most intuitive thing is to run, and you just never, ever, ever, ever want to run because the bear will chase you. And so, you know, basically bear spray. I mean, it's said to be 98% effective if you use it properly. And so I think if you're going on a trail and hike in bear country, you should bring bear spray and learn how to use it. And I think then if you'll avoid any trouble. And if you are ever attacked, I mean, it's so rare, but it lives in our nightmares. But if you are ever attacked and it's a mama bear and her cubs are nearby, that's when you want to play dead. That's pretty much the only time you want to play dead. You also, though, want to play dead if it's a male grizzly, but if it's acting defensively, if it's acting predatorily, you want to fight for your life. So I'll be honest, it sounds confusing, and I think it is, but I think I've spoken with bear experts who have been working in the field with bears for decades, and they've emerged unscathed. They know what they're doing. So I'll trust people like Dan LeGrander of Alberta-based Bear Scare.
Now, let's say you're hiking in Glacier or Yellowstone, and we have a lot of families listening to the show. Is it true that, you know, you haven't seen a bear at all, but you're on a trail where you might? Is it true that you do want to make a lot of noise before you even see a bear, or just be singing, or just kind of constantly?
Yeah.
I mean, that's always my great hope, is that our three boys are so loud when they hike. You know, they're always singing or wrestling or whatever. That just like the amount of noise we might make could hopefully be a deterrent anyway. Is that true?
Yes. Yes, that's true. And I think that's smart. I annoy my husband because I'm a little, as I said, slightly neurotic about it. So I'll like yell, "Hey, bear," every like 30 seconds. And, you know, he wants to also enjoy the peace and quiet of the wilderness. So we don't want to be like storming the wilderness, being as loud as we can, because that sort of detracts from the serenity of why we're there in the first place. But I do think you want to just sort of talk, and groups of people hiking are always safer against, in those cases, against bears or mountain lions than solitary people. So I think, yeah, if your kids are singing, great, you know, and but if you're hiking along for a solid half hour, just totally quiet, I would start talking, arguing.
All right. Good tips. Now, we are not done yet. We're going to be diving into a few more of the most common wildlife, the creatures that we're going to encounter when we're out using RVs and camping. So everybody stay tuned. We'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're back again for a second segment with Rachel Levin, the author of Look Big and Other Tips for Surviving Animal Encounters of All Kinds. And now we're going to talk about bees and bison and all kinds of cool stuff. But before we do that, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. Keeping your tanks in tip-top condition is a very important part of the RV maintenance. We've used our Thetford products for our tanks since we bought our very first pop-up camper 9 years ago. From freshwater tank sanitizers to now drain lubricant and level gauge cleaner, they have everything you need to keep your tanks operating as they should be. Visit Thetford.com to see a complete lineup of holding tank products.
And before we dive back in with Rachel, I also want to say we're going to be giving away a couple copies of Look Big. I think we're going to do one inside our Facebook group, RVFTA The Group, so you want to make sure you have joined that. And we'll also be doing an Instagram giveaway. So if you're not following us on Instagram, you know, like, come on already, let's do this. Jump on our Instagram account and keep yourself tuned in, and we'll be giving away a copy there as well. Welcome back to the show, Rachel.
Hi, thanks.
All right. We're parents. We have little kids. Should we be concerned about bees, wasps, and hornets this summer as we travel?
I mean, think about when you were a kid. Weren't you a little concerned about bee stings? Or well, maybe once? I think it's everyone's first encounter with
Yeah, absolutely. I know that I don't know if this is correct. I'm always just telling my kids, stop, stay still, don't swat at it. And they're like, are you crazy, Mom? Like, they're screaming and running around.
My brother once swatted a bee. It was right in front of his face, and I was sitting across from him with an ice cream cone. There were bees all over the place. We were at an ice cream shop. He swatted the bee, and it was like slow motion coming right at me in between the eyes, and it bit me right in between the eyes.
Stung you. It didn't bite you. It stung you.
It stung me.
Ow. Ow. That's mean. Your brother. That was mean of your brother to pass it off to you.
It was. So what do we need to know to be safe here?
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right, Jenny. I think stay still is what you're supposed to do. I mean, you want to be as, like, super still. Super still. But that's hard when you're little because you're scared. But you've got to be stay still. And it will probably go away. If you start swatting at it, it just annoys it. So try to stay still, kids. If you step on a log or you accidentally, like, sit on one or sit on, you know, go through a bush and there's a nest, and you could be swarmed, then you can run. So you're probably just as fast as a bee, or the bee is just as fast as you, but it'll probably give up before you do. So just keep running, I guess. I mean, you know, and if you jump into a lake, that's not going to help you. Apparently, they wait for you to resurface.
That's what I thought. I thought you were supposed to go jump in water.
I know. I mean, you could, but you might want to, I don't even know. You stay under there for a little longer, get up to the other side of the lake. It's hard to try to fool them out. But yeah, everyone's going to get stung by a bee at some point in their life. And if you want to try to avoid it, don't sweat. Because your body odor attracts bees. but do wear deodorant. Deodorant would help deter that body odor. No perfume, no cologne, because why? But bees, yeah. So if you get stung, you just want to get the stinger out. Don't pinch it. It'll just sink further, but, like, flick it off. Wasps, yellow jackets, hornets, those guys, those are the ones to watch out for, and they just keep stinging and keep going. So there's really not too much you can do. You can just wash with soap and apply ice, but if you are allergic and break out in hives or anything like that or have trouble breathing, call 911. Some people are allergic to bees. About 4% of Americans are sensitive to insect stings, and about 60 people a year die from them. But that's really rare, and you probably will know if you're allergic to bees, hopefully, before a bee stings you.
All right, now, again, we're moving from these, like, itty-bitty creatures to these large, gigantic creatures, but I cannot tell you how much of an issue it is in the sort of outdoors community, right, the bison encounters. So it's the summer season, and it's when so many people head out to the big, you know, the Yellowstone and, you know.
Well, we're going to South Dakota and Custer State Park. I want to see bison. I really want to see bison, but, Rachel, I also want to know what I need to know. So tell me.
Yeah, I mean, bison are beautiful animals. People want to see them. We go to see to Yellowstone to see bison. But people are thinking bison are just like big teddy bears.
Like cows. Like they're big cows.
Yeah. They are like ginormous animals that can do some damage. And you don't want to get too close to them. You want to give them space. Like, we all like space, but give them like space. So people have been getting gored by bison in Yellowstone. I mean, I think even this season already someone was. In 2015, 5 people were injured by bison in Yellowstone alone because they were too close to them. They were getting like 3 to 6 feet close to towards the bison. You want to give them at least, the park rules say, I think around 75 feet. It's just no selfies. Like, people are just taking selfies with wild animals, not because it's all in the name of like, I have the cool Instagram shot. You know, they all in the name of likes. You need to stop taking selfies with bison. So no selfies. Give them space. And if you're in a car driving through Yellowstone, just slow down and be patient and wait for it to move. You know, bison have been known to attack cars. It's really, really rare, but just kind of be chill and just don't get out of your car if it's.
So it's really, for bison, it's really about, like, they're not going to sneak up on you. So it really is about, you know, respecting just their desire as wild animals for you not to get too close. And if you do that, you won't be in danger.
Yeah, if you're getting attacked by a bison, it's probably your fault. I mean, I think, you know, you're just doing something stupid. So, I mean, and true, like, July and August, like, mama bison are, like, you know, going to be mean. So they're going to be defending their babies, and you want to just stay out of their way. Let's just stay out of their way. And I think that seems possible. I mean, there's a chance you could startle it. You could come upon one, and just give it a super wide berth. Cause they will charge you at 40 miles per hour.
Zoom lens, people.
Ginormous horns.
Bring a zoom lens. Okay. No iPhone selfies, bring a zoom and you'll be good to go. All right, mosquitoes.
Yes, everyone is thinking they're National Geographic photographers, and they're not.
That's a good thing to clear out. Thank you, Rachel.
So true, though. All right, mosquitoes seem to be a real problem this summer. So what do we need to know to avoid mosquito bites and mosquito encounters?
I know, mosquitoes ruin everything if you're just sitting around. Out here in California, I don't miss them, but when I'm back home on the East Coast, in New England especially, mosquitoes are everywhere. So actually, it was my brother-in-law that told me about these cool kind of makes swatting mosquitoes fun is this thing called Zap It, which is like a little badminton. Well, it feels like a little badminton racket that you can just sit around and swat mosquitoes, and that makes it more of a fun. It kind of zaps it.
Yeah, we have those, Rachel, and we love them.
Do they work for you?
Yeah, right? We actually love them. Our dog has a different opinion. Because I think I think the high pitched
The frequency
it makes. So we were like, oh, get out the zap it, the little rackets, which we keep in our bay. And Maggie like goes off and hides in the corner, the poor thing. So.
Oh, interesting. So yeah, maybe if you have a dog, maybe that's not the thing for you. But citronella candles help, but like, do they really forever? I mean, they do a little bit better than not having them. Wearing light colors and long sleeves supposedly helps. You could rub your body with fresh lime. I was told from someone at the American Mosquito Control Association that that helps.
Wow, I've never heard that before. I thought I'd heard them all.
You know what? If we're heading up into New England, I want to try that if we have bad mosquitoes.
I know. I mean, I don't know if it's the top deterrent, but, you know, you might as well give it a shot. But basically, you want to wear bug spray and use bug spray. And, you know, there's a bunch of EPA-registered products with less than 40% DEET, which are good, like Sawyer, Off, or Ultrathon I've been using, which is actually, I think, finding to be really effective. And lemon eucalyptus oil-based products also work. And so, you know, you want to just not get eaten alive, as they say.
Stephanie, is there like an oil that you could get that's like a lemon eucalyptus?
Yeah, it's always, it's hard to tell. I never know whether these natural ones that I'm using, you know, make a difference. You always wonder, well, are they just not bad right now? Or is my natural product actually working? You know, I think that I've enjoyed using that the more natural ones that I just mix from oils myself based on what people tell you about the eucalyptus and everything. I think I like to use them just when the mosquitoes aren't that bad. And then when we're somewhere where you literally see the swarm of mosquitoes, maybe near a body of water or whatever, I just am like, I mean, we do carry the Off with the, you know, level of DEET that is safer, I suppose, for kids. Yeah. So, and then to just have that, because in those instances, it doesn't really ever feel like a little lemon's going to cut it.
right. Yeah. And get one of those hats with nets. They look dorky, but you know what? If you wanted to be outside and don't want to be bothered, wear one of those.
I wonder how those would play on our Instagram account.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I have to say, I never actually considered that a possibility unless I was like deciding to travel in the Amazon or something. I don't know.
That must be kind of like cool. Like
really, but maybe we could bring those back, Rachel. Maybe we can make them hip again. I don't know.
Start a trend. Yeah. Start a trend here in America.
I'll think about it.
Stephanie hates snakes, and we do a lot of hiking. We've done a lot of hiking all over the country. So any tips for dealing with snake encounters?
They, just like bison, you're supposed to give them a ride berth. Most of the bad stuff happens with snakes when you are playing with them or you get in their way. So you want to just leave them alone. Like, ideally, you just want to leave them alone. Kids love snakes. I mean, my son just came back from day at camp yesterday talking all about snakes, and now he plays with these snakes. But I was like, well, you were with people who knew those snakes. So normally you don't want to play with snakes unless you know what kind of snake it is. So if you see a snake, leave it alone. Give it at least 15 feet. If it's a rattlesnake and it's coiled and rattling, and its head is raised, you want to give it even more space. And if you do get bitten, you want to stay cool, like literally chill and don't run around, don't jump around, don't get crazy, because apparently your heart rate gets up. That makes the venom seep faster. So you want to just stay calm, which sounds way easier than it is.
Yeah, that's not, it's not, as soon as I see one, I just start like, I can't even stop that natural reaction from jumping, you know, like, wah! Like it just sends shivers through me. I don't know why I cannot get, you know, calm myself.
We've had very few snake encounters.
Yeah, and that's maybe why.
Theo occasionally claims that he has spotted snakes while we're hiking, and I wonder if that is true.
Yeah. Well, we hiked in New Mexico in places where they had the rattlesnake warnings, and I was on edge, you know, my eyes scanning, staying on the trail, like, the whole time. It did make me a little
Luckily,
nervous.
In places like New Mexico, you can have good visibility on some of the hikes, too, right? There wasn't a lot
of, like, it's not hiding as much. Yeah. I mean, don't wear flip-flops.
Right.
You know. Don't use earbuds. I mean, you shouldn't really hike in the wilderness with earbuds either, because you want to be aware of what's going on around you. But especially in rattlesnake country, you want to be able to hear the rattle.
Well, that's a good tip, though, because, you know, a lot of people that do trail running and things like that probably do listen to music while they're doing it, but that might make them just a little bit less safe. Now, I worry about ticks, because we camp in some places that definitely there are tick problems. So anything we can do to avoid the ticks?
Ticks are just sort of like the bane of summer existence. I mean, it's like ruin. It used to be like just lying around on the grass and like lolling and playing in the field in summer. It was like the best thing ever. And now it's like tick. It's like tick alert, tick alert. I mean, ticks, especially in the Northeast, one of every two or three ticks is infected with Lyme disease. So especially in New England, you want to be aware. Even out here in California, they're kind of becoming more of an issue. You want to just check. You're going to probably have a tick on your body at some point this summer, and you want to just make sure you find it. Just, you don't want it to sit there sucking your blood and get infecting you with Lyme. So basically, you want to just check for ticks every night. So it's like make it part of your like nighttime ritual with your kids, like brush teeth, tick check.
The boys love it when Stephanie gives them a tick check. I don't think she loves it equally.
They're getting a little older and the tick checks are like, but
she's been putting it on me more.
I've been very almost religious about that. And it's funny because that's all I really can say to people when they ask me for advice. So it's good to hear that that's your advice also. Like, I mean, when we camp, really, when we're outside at any point, the boys are so used to it. They get out of their shower because, of course, it's like shower first. I don't want to be giving you a tick check to your dirty little body. And they just sit there and I do the full body scan, like just top to bottom. And we do sometimes find ticks, but they haven't. Most of the time, they're not super latched, you know, or whatever. And we're outside so much. And I think it's because of those checks and just basically like always like, of course, taking off the clothes and everything that we haven't had that many instances of real latched in ticks.
For how much we camp too. Rachel, did you flee New England because of the ticks and mosquitoes?
No, I didn't. I fled to California just to check out California. And now I'm still here, like forever later. But ticks, I have to say, like it is one of those things. Like, we're going back east. Now we have to deal with ticks and mosquitoes. it is a worry where I don't have to worry about it out here. It's kind of nice, I have to say. But then I have to worry about earthquakes, which is a whole other worry.
There's plenty of things to worry about.
Worry about mosquitoes.
That'll be your next book, Rachel.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, that's a great idea. All right, everybody, we're here with Rachel Levin, the author of Look Big and Other Tips for Surviving Animal Encounters of All Kinds. We're going to give away a copy of this book on our Instagram account. We're going to give away another copy of this book inside our private Facebook group, RVFTA, the group. So you want to make sure you're following us in both of those places. And now for the grand finale with Rachel. Let's talk overall about animal safety from most to least deadly. You have this great little list in the book, and it's kind of surprising. So can you kind of give us the rundown of animal safety from most to least deadly?
Sure. I thought it would be a fun and appropriate way to end the book, to close it, because it is organized alphabetically. So otherwise, I would have just ended on woodpeckers, and that would have been it. I thought we needed something more. And so I thought, how about a list of animals, the most deadliest animals in America, or in the U.S., from most to least deadly. And so the top of the list, what do you think is the top of the list? Deer.
Oh, really, because of...
I was shocked. Car accidents,
right? Yeah.
200 a year. I mean, it's really an issue in places like Montana and rural and Wyoming and rural places where, dusk and dawn and deers are leaping out and people are driving really fast.
That's so interesting, though, because I think that so many people traveling in places like Wyoming and Montana, they're so worried about that bear encounter while hiking, and I certainly would be.
Exactly.
But really, you need to be a lot more worried about just driving from place to place because of hitting a deer.
I know. If you want to, especially in the mornings and in the evenings, you want to just like keep your eyes peeled. And wear your seatbelts and make sure your headlights are working and never text. I mean, all the normal driving safety things, but it's that you really want to just be aware because a deer will leap out of nowhere. We were driving in Great Basin National Park the other weekend and a little black sheep jumped out of nowhere. You know, they just come out of nowhere. You don't see them and they just come onto the road. And the sad thing, we were fine. The sheep was fine. They were fine. But if it was a deer and you're driving, you want to ideally hit the brakes before you hit the deer. They say, you know, intuition would tell you to swerve, but you don't want to swerve. That's like colliding with a car barreling toward you from the other side is actually worse than running into a buck. And so you really just want to keep driving. If you can't stop, you got to just keep going.
All right, reassure us. Let's get safer now.
Okay.
All right, what animal is and then, a little less
sorry,
deadly?
We're going down, but yeah, but we love deer. Next, bees, wasps, and hornets. As we mentioned, 60 people a year, but that is mostly due to people being who are allergic. So I think there's a way, you know, don't be afraid. Don't be that afraid of bees, but it's rare. It's still rare. All of these are rare. Next on the list, you might be surprised to hear, and I'm sorry to say it, dogs. And that's going to annoy some people.
Dogs. If it's a statistic, it's a statistic.
So infected dog bites?
20 to 30 people a year. Dog bite, and usually it's by dogs you know. And dogs with rabies. More than 50% of dog bites occur on your own property. Kids ages 5 to 9 get bitten the most, which is makes sense because they're just kind of playing with the dog and don't necessarily know the right protocol for approaching a dog. Between like 2005 and 2016, almost 400 Americans were killed by dogs. And it is certain kinds of dogs usually, but, you know, you don't want to pigeonhole pit bulls. But, you know, according to certain statistics, most of those deaths are from dogs of the pit bull, Rottweiler persuasion. But, you know, any dogs, there was a story the other day, a bunch of Dachshunds or something killed a woman. I don't know. But basically, yeah, dogs are, we love them. They're everyone's best friend. We love them. But you want to just,
they're dogs.
Be safe around dogs.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They're
still animals. So I'm sorry to all the dog lovers.
Just, you know, it's never a bad reminder that we need to be respectful around animals, right? Like they are animals ultimately. And I mean, we always tell our kids, we have the sweetest dog in the world, but I am like, you need to understand that if you startle her, like, you know, like sometimes they're just playing so rough. And I'm like, if you right now landed on her, right, like off the couch or something, her natural instinct, her natural protection instinct for herself could come out. And that we've never seen before. So I'm always telling them that, even though we have the sweetest dog in the world.
Every dog lover should. And I really don't think you're offending any dog lovers out there, because someone who loves their dog is going to know that, and they're going to be careful and cautious.
You want to protect the dog from putting them in a situation where they act like that, too, you know, out of a field of self-protection. So, all right, Rachel.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for hopping on and joining us for this episode. Just kind of giving us an overview of all those rascally, you know, wildlife creatures that we kind of want to encounter when we go out into nature, but then at the same time we're kind of like not having a great time encountering them.
And we just have to, just one more here. Bears. How many a year? Just 'cause that's what most of our listeners are worried about.
Right. And so bears about one person a year. Where we have deer at 200. So no one's afraid of deer. Everyone's like hiking around living in fear of bears, but bears most likely are not going to kill you.
So the moral of the
story, even I'm saying that.
The moral of the story and the big takeaway for everybody is be careful when you're driving. I think that that's the lesson here. Rachel, thank you so much. This is Rachel Levin, the author of Look Big and Other Tips for Surviving Animal Encounters of All Kinds. This book is available anywhere. You could buy it at Amazon. You could buy it at Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. And we'll be giving away two copies, one on Instagram and one in our private Facebook group. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a fun summer.
Yeah, you too.
You
stay
too.
Safe.
Be safe. Look big.
You too. You look big.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back to the show, everybody, and a big thank you to Rachel Levin, the author of Look Big. It is the most charming book on wildlife safety that has ever been published in the history of the universe. So go grab a copy. We're going to be doing some giveaways within our private Facebook group, RVFTA The Group, and on our Instagram account. So you want to go over and follow us there. Now, we have some other great resources for you, both other books and online resources. And this segment is sponsored by our friends at Go Power.
Go Power has been a trusted, recognized leader in the business of solar technology for over 20 years. Their high-quality solar chargers, inverters, controllers, and power accessories offer a durable, dependable, and cost-effective solution for mobile power needs where grid power is inaccessible, unavailable, or unsustainable. And Go Power is also helping us enjoy all the comforts of our RV, even when we aren't staying at full hookup campgrounds with 50-amp electricity this year. We're very excited for the freedom that it gives us to be more flexible in our travels and get off the grid a little bit, even if it means just saving money by camping free in a Cabela's parking lot and still being able to make coffee in the morning and enjoy the comforts of the RV. So another big perk we're loving is that we can drive down the road with a refrigerator running on power from the solar panels, and we don't have to worry about using the propane while we're driving.
Particularly good for like a really long trip, you know, where it's like going to take a couple days of driving from get to point A to point B. We don't have to worry about the food in the refrigerator.
All right, visit gpelectric.com for more information.
All right, so additional resources for wildlife safety. There's another book I have that I also really like. It doesn't necessarily have the full-on charm and personality of Rachel's book, but it's packed with a lot of great information. It's called Don't Get Eaten, The Dangers of Animals That Charge or Attack. It's by Dave Smith. It's only $8 on Amazon. It's published by the Mountaineer Press, which they do a lot of great hiking books and hiking guides and things like that. It's a really slim pocket-sized guidebook, and I fully recommend this one as well. Also, you might want to Google this National Geographic article, and we'll link to it in the show notes. It's called Tourists Behaving Badly, What Not to Do in National Parks. And it's an interesting article because it goes over some of the problems that they've been having in national parks with people getting too close to animals and trying to take selfies with bison.
Honestly,
and all that stuff.
Honestly, it's not rocket science.
It's not rocket science.
I mean,
it's a lot of common sense involved.
Yeah, it really
is. And if you listen to that interview with Rachel and you're just like, that's common sense, that's common sense, that's common sense. Well, apparently a lot of people don't have that common sense because there are more and more problems like these in the national parks. All right, so another resource, okay? If you're visiting a national park, go to the individual website for that national park, whether you're going to Arches or Acadia National Park. I went through a bunch of them, and almost every single one of them, I think every single one of them, actually has a section on wildlife safety about their particular park, because the risks and the safety advice they're going to give in Yellowstone is going to be much different than the risks and safety advice they're going to give in Acadia National Park in Maine.
It's also important to talk to the rangers when you're actually going, because what they do is they give you very good information on recent sightings. These things don't happen out of, you know, a vacuum. Oftentimes they'll say, there's been a bear that's hanging around this picnic area a lot, you know, and they tell you where certain issues may be and to be beware, you know, to beware of those while you're hiking or visiting a certain area. So I would really recommend always talking to rangers.
I can think of at least two times when a park ranger in a national park gave us a wildlife safety tip that was very particular to this hiking trail or that picnic area. So you're right. That's a great tip. Ask the park rangers, are there any major concerns we need to be thinking about as we enjoy the park? This last resource, if you are going to Yellowstone or anywhere where bears are an issue, this is like an awesome comprehensive resource. Okay, this last resource is terrific if you're going anywhere where bears are a concern. The National Park Service has a section of their website entirely devoted to bear safety. It's called Staying Safe Around Bears. It's comprehensive. It talks about using bear spray. It has links to videos. It has everything you need, and it's probably the best free resource online about bear safety. We will also link to that one in the show notes.
Yeah, because everybody that talks about using bear spray is the most effective deterrent also mentions that you better know how to use it correctly.
There are actually drawings on there, illustrations on there about how to use bear spray. And then there's a couple good videos you can link to. So, I mean, if you're going to Yellowstone, if you're going to Glacier, you really want to go to this page within the National Park Service's website. And again, we will link to it in the show notes.
All right. So hopefully that'll help you stay a little safe and have fun in our national parks this summer. Stay tuned. We're going to be back in a minute for our RVFTA News Roundup.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It is time for our RVFTA News Roundup, and there's a lot of exciting stuff going on as we kick off our big summer season of RV travel. And this News Roundup is sponsored by our friends at Go RVing.
If you're looking to maximize your time at the campground this year, you really should consider reserving a seasonal site at a beautiful campground close to home. When you reserve a seasonal site, you're going to enjoy the ease and practicality of leaving your RV at the campground year-round, or at least during the season. We love the idea of arriving at the campground ready to fish, hike, kayak, or just relax around the pool with a good book. And seasonal campers also benefit from discounted prices on the best campsites. Some campgrounds will even rent your site out if you want to take your RV on a longer trip during the season. So whether you want to escape to the mountains or unwind next to a lake, there's a seasonal site out there for you. Learn more at GoRVing.com/seasonal camping.
All right, the RVFTA News Roundup. Over on Campground of the Week, Matt and Melissa Kellis are back with a great review of the Thousand Islands KOA in Canada, and they give some great tips over there. I think they really like that campground. Also, we, at this moment that you are listening to this podcast, if you are listening to it the week that it comes out, we are in Nova Scotia. So you want to make sure you're following along on our social media channels, on Instagram, on Facebook. Hopefully, we're going to try this new IGTV thing out, right? Instagram now allows you to drop up to 10-minute videos. They're trying to compete with YouTube. So we're going to try that out on this trip as well. So make sure you're following along on RVFTA social channels to see all the beautiful pictures of Nova Scotia.
All right. In case you missed it, last week we had tons of great cooking content from Kate over at Kate's Curious Kitchen. So she had a cast iron cooking episode for us on the podcast last week. Then to go along with that, she also held a two-day Facebook Live. It was two parts over the course of 2 days where she went live on our RVFTA Facebook page showing us all the meal planning that she was doing going into her five-week RV trip with her family.
It was incredible. It was an incredible two-part series. And there's something there for everybody, right? I mean, like, I was at least half of the things that she talked about is like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try this this summer. Lots of great tips. She keeps it simple for beginners as well.
Yeah, the seasoning, the marinades, all that stuff is very user-friendly and easy. There's nothing too complicated. And then she had a little more, you know, then she had the biscuits and everything if you wanted to go a little bit more, you know, fancy. Scratchy now, baking if you wanted
to. The big bonus here, a 30-page recipe packet for free. Stop the madness. Tell us where we can find that, Stephanie.
So at rvfta.com, over on the blog, you'll find both her grocery shopping list PDF, her meal planning PDF, and then a 30-page recipe packet with all the seasonings, the marinades, the grilling recipes, the beverage concentrates. Like, she makes an iced tea concentrate and a lemonade concentrate, and that's all over there also. So it's a really amazing resource that Kate shared with us. And thanks to Emily, my PDF magician, for putting it together for us. I really appreciate it. So you can go over there and get it for yourself.
Also, a big thank you to everyone who's been leaving us such great iTunes reviews. We really do appreciate it. A particular big thank you to Simone from Alabama. And she wrote, "This is our third year camping, and I feel like I learn something new every time I listen to a podcast. Keep up the great work." Thank you, Simone. We try to do something new and different on every single podcast. We're going to keep things fun and interesting all summer long. And if you've been enjoying this show or Campground of the Week, please head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. We sure would appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you at the campground.
We'll see you at the campground.